session number 10413, reel 1.
Mr. George South, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. South?
I was born in Bridlington on the 10th of February, 1920.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was a master tailor.
How many were there in the family?
Three boys, one girl, and a boy and a girl that died in very young.
What sort of an upbringing did you have? Was it a comfortable childhood? Could you give us any idea what conditions were like?
Well, I would say I had a very strict upbringing. In fact, I would say the only one in the family. I was supposed to be the little gentleman, where the other ones had an easier life than what I had. My mother thought I should be a gentleman.
Were you well provided for?
I was well provided for. The thing that, when I look back now, the thing that annoyed me most about my childhood was I was never allowed to play with other children. When my brothers came along, I used to have to look after them. When we lived in Bridlington, my mother took in boarders during the summer. And my job, from being 7 year old anyhow, was taking my younger brother, who was a baby, out all day, out of the road of the visitors, while she did her bit, till bedtime, 6 o'clock at night. And that was my life, right up to about 1930.
Which school did you go to?
I went to the Bridlington School. I cannot remember the name of it now, but it was the big school on Quay Road in Bridlington.
What sort of an education did you get there?
Just a primary, because, as I say, nearly 1930, we moved to a little village outside of the city of Hull called Hesel, where I went to school at Hesel. There was only one school in Hesel. I went there for about a year. And then we moved into the city. And I went for the last 3 years to the Thomas Barton Holmes School.
So you were at school till 14, weren't you? And what level of education do you think you'd reached by that time?
Well, I passed an examination just before I was 14. And I could have gone to the grammar school, but unfortunately my father at that particular time was unemployed, and at the grammar school in those days you had to buy all your books and everything, and he would never have been able to afford it, so I finished school at 14. I was never allowed to go on.
So that would be about 1934?
1934, the Easter.
And what job were you to go into?
Well, I wanted to go as an apprentice in any job, engineering mostly. But unfortunately, whether it was because there were a lot of left school at that particular time, I finished up an errand boy.
Who for? What
for a laundrette. The American Steam, Steam Press and Hygienic Company. That was what it was called. And then I got a job in a baker's, where I was going to take an apprentice, and I was on trial for 3 months, I think it was, before I would have signed an apprentice form. And me and the baker fell out. And so I went back to an errand boy. Then in 1935, we moved to a seaside resort called Witherenshey.
Whereabouts is that?
Not very far from Hull. It's on the coast from Hull. About 88 miles, I think. And my father had got a job there, but there was a 3 weeks gap. So he was on the dole again. And I attended the juvenile dole. And I was handed a green card to go to be a farm labourer. And I told the gentleman behind the bar what he could do with his green card. I wouldn't be no farm labourer. That was on the Thursday. My father went to draw his dole on the Friday. And no dole for you, Mr. Self. Your son refused the job yesterday. An hour later, I was a farm labourer, which didn't last long, fortunately. I went to work for a man called Woodhouse. And his brother had a haulage contracting business, cattle remover, coal merchant, you name it, he had it. And I was on the farm for about 9 months when this brother asked me to go and work for him. So I did do. And I worked for him till I joined the army.
Was that just labouring, loading the wagons, or was the driver?
I wasn't a driver, I was too young. I was only 17, just over 17 when I left him. I had driven, unofficially. He'd learned me to drive, so that when I became of age, I could get my licence. But we moved cattle from Hull to Witherenshey in the summer months. In the lambing season, we carried a lot of lambs up to the cooperative store butchery in York. And when I wasn't on the cattle removing, I was carrying bags of coal, or if we were shifting somebody, you know, you did everything.
Were you happy in that work?
I wouldn't say I was happy, but it was a job. And in a little place like Witherenshey is, if you weren't a fisherman, you were lucky to get a job. You had to go farm work, because it was a rural area. But I never have liked the land. I still don't like the garden today.
Were you, on the recreational side, as you got older, had you broke free a bit from the parental sort of limits?
In the last 2 or 3 years at school, I played in the rugby team. I played cricket, and I did a distance running for the school, the mile. That was my...
So you'd broken out a bit?
Oh, yes.
What about, were you in the Boy Scouts or the Boys Brigade or any
organisation? No, I was in the Hull Boys Club, which was... like a youth centre. You know, you did a bit boxing and a bit table tennis and all this stuff. You spent your nights there rather than be on the streets.
There was no drilling or anything like that?
No.
What made you decide to join the army? What was it? Or what made you think of it in the first place?
Well, my father was badly wounded in the First World War. And he was a terrier in the Territorial Army after the war. But a lad came to work with me. He'd just come out of the forces. He'd been to India most of his service. And he used to talk to me a lot about what they did while he was in the forces. And I think that was the first thing. But the thing that really made me join was my father, unfortunately, was a womaniser, a drinker, a gambler. And I walked in the house one night when he was badly using my mother. And so, for the first time in my life, I hit him. And I decided there and then that it was time I moved on.
So what did you do?
And so on the Monday following, I went to the cattle market with cattle in Hull. And my boss got a load of cattle to take back to Withernsea. And he left me in Hull to go around the farmers and see if they had anything to go back. And it was a 2-hour journey to go to Withernsea and back. So I went round the farmers and I had an hour to spare. So I walked up to the recruiting officers and I asked if I could join the army. And the recruiting sergeant said, "When now?" And I said, "Oh no, I'll have to give a week's notice." So he said, "Well, while you're here, we'll give you an education test." So they gave us an education test.
What exactly was it?
Well, you had to answer questions, written answers, with as much explanation as you could. I couldn't tell you what the questions were now.
Any trouble with it, though?
No trouble at all. And he said to me, he asked me my age, and unfortunately I told him my correct age, and he said to me, "You're too old to join as a band boy, you're too young to join as a man," because the age then was 18, and he asked me what I would like to join. And I said, "The tank car."
What made you say that? What?
Well, with this job I had, I wanted to know about the mechanics of the motor engine. And I thought, the best place to get to know that is tanks or what have you. And so I said, I wanted to join the tank car. And so he said to me, "Well, go home, put your notice in, come back. And what I'll do for you is, I'll send you to an inventory depot to do your square bashing. By the time you're 18, you can then transfer to the tank corps."
Had you had a physical, by the way?
So then I had a physical, yes. I had a physical after we'd talked. And I went back to my boss and loaded up, and during the journey I told him that I would be leaving him on the Saturday, and he's very annoyed. I told him where I was going and why I was doing it, and he he asked me to, if he could find somewhere for me to live, would I stop? And I said, no, I wanted to be out of the place altogether. The best thing for me and my father was split. And so the following Monday I reported to the recruiting office and I was sent to Fenham Barracks in Newcastle.
Now this all took place in December 1937, is that correct? Right.
The 2nd of December, I think, when I put my name on the dotted line and received the King's shilling.
So you were sent to Fenham Barracks. Mm-hmm. Did you know who you were joining? Cause
he told us the Durham Light Infantry was there.
And had you any impression about the DLI?
I had no idea. My father was in the East Yorks. The only thing I knew was the East Yorks and the Green Howards, which is a Yorkshire regiment. See? Knew nothing about the Durham Light.
Would you rather have gone to a Yorkshire regiment, or
It didn't make any difference. See, I was only going that particular time. I was only going for my square bashing, and then going into the tank corps. I'd signed up in what they call in those days the supplementary reserve. And you joined for 6 months. You did 6 months training. The end of your 6 months, you could either say yes and take on in the regular army, or no and go home. And for 4 years, you did a month's training each year with the Durhams. On the day of my 18th birthday, which is 10th of February, 1938, I was sent for to the COs.
I'll come to that actually. I'll do a bit about what happened before that. What happened when you told your family and friends that you joined up? How did they react?
Well, I had to have a form filled in from the recruiting office, and it had to be signed by two witnesses, one of them having to be my father. And the police sergeant at Witherington knew my father was in the First World War with him. And I went and saw him first, and he signed it for me. And I went home, told my father what I'd done, and he just said to me, are you sure this is what you want? I said, yes, after what happened last week, I want to be out. And so he signed it.
What about the rest of your family? How did they?
Well, the Burns was only young at that time. I don't think it made that much difference to them. My mother wasn't very pleased about it, but after we talked for the rest of the week before I went away, I think she accepted it.
So you went off to Fenham Barracks. They gave you a warrant, I presume. Mm-hmm. What happened when you got there? What reception did you get at the barracks?
Well, when I got there, I found myself with 30 other civilians. They were just forming this squad, as they used to call them. And they were from all over the northeast. I think there was three of us from Yorkshire, where two of them were from Middlesbrough, that area. I was the furthest away. And that day, we were just taken sure where we would sleep. We were learned how to make our beds up in the morning and that. And that was it for that day. And the next day, we received our uniforms. And then we started.
You got your kit then as well, did you? Mm. What was actually issued at that time? Can you remember?
Just about everything. Three pairs of socks, three shirts, two pair of underpants, two uniforms, one fatigue suit, boots, sand shoes, caps, tin hats. You got all that the next day.
And what was you were with? Did you know you were with Salamanca squad yet? That was what you were with.
Oh yes, we were. You know, when we took in this room where we were going to sleep, across the door, Salamanca.
What was the barrack room like? What was the arrangement of it? Where did you put all this kit and everything?
Well, you had a locker above your bed. Tin locker. And all your kit went in that locker. Except in your tin hat, your equipment. And that hung behind the headboard. So you had nothing outside. Your civvies was took off you, parcelled up and sent home. And it was two rooms, and there was, in the bottom room, two long rooms there were. In the bottom room, there was 15 beds and a bunk for the corporal in charge. And the rest of us was in the other room.
Anything ever else of note about the barrack room that you remember?
Not particularly. There were just a room with a bed, with the beds and the lockers. That's all there was.
What about washing facilities? Where were they?
Well, they were outside. They were in another part of the building.
So what would your daily routine be in this early part of basic drill? How would you get through the day?
Well, you used to... Reveille was 6 o'clock. Breakfast was about 7:15.
What was the food like compared to what you'd been used to?
It wasn't too bad. The only thing, I always remember the first Sunday I was there, we had rabbit pie. And the thing I could never understand, the whole time I was in the forces, used to stick to your fingers, like glue. You know, when you pick the bone up to... used to stick to your fingers, just like glue. You got used to it in time.
Was it good enough quality for you?
Oh, the quality was there. It was the way that it was cooked. I think, you know, at home, you cooked just for a small family. Where up there, they cooked for about 400 men. And all the taters went in one pot, all the cabbage. And it was a different kind of cooking. And that was the only thing that...
So they just didn't have the individual attention to make it better. But the quality was alright.
You used to get a Dixie, 12 men to a table. You used to get enough taters for 12, enough cabbage, and enough of whatever it was for 12. And generally the 12th man got out because everybody else...
I was wondering how they divided it out. Was that...
Well, the two men at the top of the table, it was their job to dish it out, pass it down.
Did that cause any trouble?
Well, sometimes it did because they put too much. And it kept getting less and less until sometimes they finished it with nothing. But the annoying thing in there, in the dining room, was you weren't allowed to speak. If you wanted the salt or the pepper, you couldn't ask somebody to pass you the pepper or pass the salt. That's all you did. You weren't allowed to speak on no account. If you spoke, out.
So you just made a shaking, sir.
So you just made a shaking, and you used to come up the table. And as I say, we were supposed to be there for 6 months.
So you had, and that was breakfast. What
that was breakfast.
Breakfast?
Pardon?
What would happen after breakfast?
Well, then you go back and they'd look at the detail, what you had to wear. You'd get dressed in the appropriate uniform, what it was. You'd go, maybe it's an hour and a half drill.
What did that consist of at that time?
Well, learning from standing at ease to standing to attention, left turn, right turn, about turn, you graduated. Once the sergeant was satisfied that you had a good idea of that, then you graduated to marching. Caused a lot of problems, marching.
Why?
Well, you were learned to do a 30-inch pitch. And they used to have the old pear stick. You seen a pear stick? Well, you know these sticks that the sound majors carry? Where it's split up the middle with a hinge on. And it measures exactly 30 inches. Heel to toe is 30 inches. And they used to go along with this. I also remember a lad called Sutcliffe. He's one of these boys that when he walked, he bounced up and down. And he could never get 30 inches. And they used to bray his ankles. He could never keep step with us. And at first, when you learned to march, 120 paces to the minute. But ceremonial drill was a lot faster.
That was a light infantry pace?
That was a light infantry pace. But you used to learn all your movements off the heavy infantry, firstly, which was 120.
When would you learn the faster movement, the light infantry pace?
Well, once the sergeant was satisfied that you could march as a unit, then the tempo went up to 140. With a band, it was faster than that. But you started marching at 140 then. It was a gradual build-up.
Did you have any trouble with the 30-inch pace?
No. Because the thing was, with 120, you could do the 30-inch pace. But 140, no way. Because you're going that fast, you like marking time. So your paces are shorter. But 120, you could get that 30 because you had the time. But when you got to 140 and you're shouting, lift right, lift right, lift right, lift right, you hadn't time to stretch your legs.
Would they pick you up on that then, or would they just ignore the fact
you... Oh, they ignored it. Once you got onto the light infantry march, they ignored it.
Did you enjoy drill at the time?
I enjoyed all the depot training.
Did you understand why you were doing it at the time?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was explained here. There was times when it wasn't explained here, and you worked hard. And we had a corporal that used to work us harder still when we were off for it.
I'll come to that. But so you had... That was drill. That was one thing you might have to do in the morning. What other things would you...
Then you would go on to learning rifle drill.
What did that involve?
Well, how to carry your arms, shoulder arms, slope, present arms, reverse arms, and you went through each shouting by numbers. One stop, two stop, three stop, and all this. You did everything while you were at the depot for the first 2 months. Everything was done by numbers.
And then they stopped the numbers, did they?
And then they dropped the numbers. The idea of the numbers is to get everybody to work at the same time.
So it's to get a rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Then once, again, when they were happy that, you dropped the numbers, and it was left turn, right turn, or whatever it was, and gradually you went up.